Hello, this is Sheriff John Layton, and when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
People have been talking about combining all of the courts here in Indianapolis and Marion County into one facility for years. They've also talked about moving the jail from where it is to a better spot so that probably somebody can build a big skyscraper and retirement home for senior citizen broadcasters. Anyway, there is now a proposal. There's been a proposal for over a year to combine the criminal court, the courts, community corrections, prosecutors, regular jail, community corrections, all in one facility. At first, it was going to be at the airport. Cooler heads prevailed. Now it is going to be where they used to make Chevrolet trucks and buses, just south of the railroad tracks, south of the zoo, on the west side of White River, between the railroad tracks, White River and Oliver Avenue, on the near southwest, just southwest of downtown. It is called the Marion County Justice Center. And there is a different way of doing things. Some agree with it, some disagree with it. In the house is the sheriff, John Layton, who, if this deal goes through, gets a brand new jail, not for Christmas, but Santa Claus is bringing him a note saying, you're closer, sheriff, than you were before. And it's a different way of doing business. And the new deputy mayor for economic development, Adam Collins, is also here. Guys, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
There's been a lot of all kind of stuff said about this. So what I wanted to do was walk through something you all put together when this was announced on Friday. Why do we need a new criminal court, the obvious question, and a new jail? Sheriff, why do we need a new jail?
Let me tackle the jail. Well, I can surely
do
that.
Yeah, I think you got the jail
part. As far as the courts and other entities that will probably be engaged in this new endeavor, I can't speak a whole lot to what the prosecutor or the judges, some of these different entities, public defender's office, right. I can tell you what we need in Marion County as a 40-year veteran of the sheriff's office and the jail. Mm-hmm. And the jail we currently have was predominantly finished in 1969. You can imagine the technology that was built into that jail at that time.
Like old-fashioned bars and locks and keys.
Absolutely. It still is, by the way. And as we move forward through the decades to our present time, the technology has come so far forward, and we have found a need for, back in 1969, nobody cared about reentry. Mm-hmm. It was unfortunate, but they really did no reentry. Mm-hmm. No reentry programs, no classes, nothing to set the inmates on any kind of course so they don't come back here.
One of the things I noticed in this, that there's a new state law that was passed earlier this year that requires all 92 counties to have to hold state prisoners, hold prisoners after they've been convicted of state crimes. In other words, instead of being sent to DOC, the sheriff gets to hold them?
Absolutely.
Who pays for that? Am I paying for that as a county taxpayer or as a state taxpayer?
No, absolutely. The county pays for it.
Unfunded mandates.
They passed that law before they passed the way to pay for it.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Oh, that sounds like
state. And what we have here is it's the folks that are on low felonies, such as the old D felony. It's all changed now, and it gets a little crazy. But the old D felonies that are less a year or less get to stay with the sheriffs in the counties now instead of going to DOC where they have in the past since they are state prisoners. But the state passed a law that the county and the sheriffs of those counties need to keep them at home.
And so, paradoxically, this new capacity where you'd have up to 3,000 beds for a new Marion County Jail in the Justice Center helps you meet this law better than the other 91 counties in the state?
Oh, absolutely. But keep in mind, this law passed July 1 of this year, of 2014. Right. We haven't seen the onslaught of it yet because it only applies to those who have been convicted since July 1. And so we haven't seen the full impact of it yet. We are estimating about a 15 to 20% rise in the headcount at the Marion County Jail because of it, though.
Now, let me move to what this facility consist of? Okay, this is going to consist of a 3,000-bed jail, correct?
Yes, yes.
That will replace the regular jail.
Yes.
That replaces jail, private jail 1 and private jail 2?
That's exactly. Well, jail 2 is the only private.
It's a private 2.
Yeah.
So all them little private jails with the guys from out of town, they're out of business. They would be out of business with this.
Well, CCA would be far from out of business, but yes, they wouldn't be one of our vendors anymore.
Okay. And then there'll be an on-site medical facility.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So who would run that medical? Because, I mean, you're a great sheriff, but you're not a doctor. So who would run that medical facility in this new jail?
We have, currently, we have contract with the medical facility. And it's their folks, it's their doctors, it's their nurses, their psychiatric evaluators.
But it wouldn't be Escanaba. Are we talking about the detention part of medical when you're arrested and you're wounded and they take you to Eskenazi?
No. These are two different animals.
This is two different animals. So
absolutely.
That's not that.
Exactly.
So the money that the county currently pays Eskenazi to take care of people who are arrested before, you know, somebody gets, like the guy that was involved in the police action shooting the other night, he was taken to Eskenazi.
Right.
That wouldn't be in the jail. You still have to pay for that. You still have to.
Oh, yeah.
Eskenazi would still send you that big bill.
Sheriff gets those bills.
I'm trying to save the deputy mayor here some money here.
And this is a good point. When we talk about trauma wounds, like somebody who's been shot, those folks are still going to have to go to Eskenazi. But part of the plan is having the new facility and have IMPD have the ability to take folks to the sheriff's office as needed. So, you know, if somebody's been hit with a taser or pepper spray or something like that, they don't have the need to go to the facility. The IMPD is going to have many more resources at their option than they currently do, and hopefully they're going to be ones that are more cost-effective. Because as the sheriff said, at the end of the day, he gets the bills either way.
All right, so now we got in this court facility. They're building 28 courtrooms and 10 hearing rooms, but we only got 24 criminal courts. So what are we getting? 4 extra courts? Is just going to be lying around loose somewhere?
No, so you have the ability to use different rooms for different purposes. So some rooms require jury court rooms, other require simple, smaller hearing rooms. So really what you have is a much more effective outlay and much more effective arrangement of the courts than you've ever had in the past. So we'll be able to right-size those spaces and use ultimately less square footage.
Given that there was no consensus at this time to move the circuit courts as the circuit court as well as the civil courts into this new justice center, will this center be built with that capacity? Are you going to cap it out at 28 courtrooms and 10 hearing rooms?
So the building will have the capacity to expand certain spaces. So if you look at jury assembly, if there's a way for us to do jury assembly virtually in the future, we'll be able to reconfigure that space to court space. In addition, one of the reasons that the GM stamping plant site was attractive initially is because it had ample room for expansion. So the design that we laid out to the bidders, ask them to contemplate that going in the future. So there'll be both internal opportunities in terms of renovating space and opportunities to add on to the building as well.
There'll be a 960-bed community corrections facility. What does that replace?
So that replaces the facility that's currently at Duval Street.
Is that the one over by I-70?
Right, exactly.
So that would replace that.
Yes, and not only play significantly expand.
Yeah, because I didn't think that Duval was not that big.
No, this is almost a doubling of that size, and that's based upon the feedback that we've gotten from our stakeholders in the criminal justice system regarding what was needed.
When I looked at the site plan, and I know that there's this rumor of somebody building a Deer Creek downtown, an amphitheater that would be on the northeast corner of the property right at White River and when White River Parkway turns into Washington Street. And then I noticed that there's an area for future development where there's a whole bunch of nice little office buildings just to the south of that. So I had to add, and I noticed here that there's going to be ample parking facility for the public, county employees. So a couple questions on parking. Where's the parking for the amphitheater, because I see the amphitheater right up against this empty space that's devoted to buildings, and I don't see any parking lot if I want to go see Aretha Franklin in 5 or 6 years. So where do I park?
So that was actually a forward-looking site plan. So in the very near term, there'll be over 5,000 spaces on that site. Some of those spaces will be on the amphitheater side. About 3,500 will be on the city side.
Mm-hmm.
So the buildings you're seeing there, those are projections towards what a future full build-out that site could look at. At that point, you'd have essentially parking garages to take care of your parking needs. But in the very near term, for the foreseeable future, you'll have about 1,500 parking spaces on the eastern half of the site, 3,500 on the western half. And that's why these two make a really great use, because they're are a really great combination of uses, because you have them both there. They use the spaces at different times, and we're able to accommodate both and have overflow when necessary.
Who controls the parking?
So the city controls the parking on our portion of the property, subject to a use agreement with the owner on the eastern half.
Yeah, they want to. And here's the other thing. Given that you're asking jurors to make this sacrifice, they don't make a lot of money for jury duty. Was any thought given to have a special parking lot just for jurors?
Juror parking will be free. That's part of the model, and it's been contemplated from the very beginning.
Wait a minute. Juror parking free.
That's correct.
No more paying the folk on the Market Square Arena that $8 or $10 to go to jury duty.
That's correct.
I should have said that at the beginning of all this process. 239-1310. 239-1310. On the local neighborhood, in the handout, it said that additional commercial growth is expected in the surrounding area, because all these people that have been hanging around the city county building will all be west of the river. When I see stuff like that, that implies that people that live in the neighborhood would be displaced. What in this plan is going to keep that neighborhood intact in these houses that I see south of Oliver Street and to the west of the facility not be taken over by, you know, some law firm's building?
So we don't think that anyone's going to be displaced. What we think we're going to see is a return of the commercial investment that was there when the GM stamping plant was up and running in its heyday and had 3,500 employees over three shifts. So, you know, in the recent years, that community has lost its bank, mm-hmm. has lost some grocery stores. So those are the kind of commercial opportunities that they're focused on. We think the mix of having about 3,600 unique visitors at that site a day is going to provide the opportunity for that kind of retail to come back into the area.
I know the neighbors were concerned, Sheriff, about the jail, your jail being in that particular neighborhood. What is the crime rate now? Because my perception is that that is not a high crime area. I don't see that neighborhood on Public Safety Director Riggs's list of top 10 hotspots.
No, it's really not. It's not a hotspot at all. They have their share. Unfortunately, we all do. I live on the south side by chance, and we have our share down there too. But it's not a problem in that neighborhood any more than it is anywhere else. And we're going to be very vigilant in that area with the deputy sheriffs coming and going constantly, as well as watching over the parking lot as our visitors are in. But the main thing is, one of the main concerns that the residents in the area had, and we tried to put those concerns to rest quite quick, was the release of inmates into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The inmate serves his time, so to speak, or he's adjudicated, mm-hmm. he or she, and they walk out the door. Where do those folks go? Mm-hmm. And that would be a concern. I know it would be a concern in my neighborhood, in any neighborhood. So we got our heads together, and I have come up with a plan, and the mayor's office agreed with it, that whenever what we will do is mm-hmm. shuttle. Mm-hmm. We will shuttle these inmates to a different location in the downtown area. Right now, when they're let out of jail one, it's right there at Alabama and Alabama and Maryland Street. Mm-hmm. Well, they just happened to be putting in the Indigo Hub right there near Alabama and Maryland. Okay. So we feel that if we shuttle these inmates to that location, they can virtually pick up a bus to anywhere they want to go in the outlying areas of Indianapolis. So that's what we're going to do. No one will go out the front gate. Everyone will be getting on a bus when they are released from the Marion County Jail.
I did not see in any of the documents a spreadsheet using the existing city budget, using as an example either the 2014 budget or the 2015 budget, that outlines the rent that these different entities that are currently scattered, including the criminal courtrooms within the city county building, are paying now. And so that one could see where all the dollars and cents, so we can see where the savings would be. Is that going to be released?
Yeah, that information will be forthcoming. We'll be releasing that to the public as part of the public process. But really, just to give you a quick view, that money's coming from a number of different buckets. You have the rent and operation costs that the sheriff and the other stakeholders are paying today. In addition, because of the fact that We no longer will need jail two in the CCA contract. You see a significant amount, over $18 million a year in the CCA contract alone, that'll be coming back to the city that can be attributable to the facility itself. In addition, you have other contract efficiencies, fuel efficiencies that we'll see from bringing those groups together in one location rather than having them spread across four or five different places in the downtown area.
We're not, this is not a deal where the city is gonna go and borrow money through bonds and build this thing ourselves. We're using something called PBI. I thought it was a bowling thing. What is this performance-based infrastructure in simple language?
So really what this is where the city doesn't borrow. What we do is we pay an annual fee for a facility that we end up owning that performs. So the difference is, rather than going out and saying, I want a building that's four stories tall and has X number of square feet, we say we need 28 courtrooms, 10 hearing rooms, 3,000 jail beds. They have to be kept in this condition. They have to be of this size. They have to be maintained to this temperature. And that's what the developer has to provide. The method in which they do that's all up to them. They provide their own private financing to do it. It's not a debt obligation that the city takes on.
In the stuff, I noticed that there's two different prices. There's a price where the annual service payment fee will be $46.8 million per year beginning in 2019. Did I read that correctly?
That's correct.
And that's in 2019 dollars, and the current value of that is $45.4 million in current dollars. Am I assuming the difference is the rate of inflation? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. What is the profit margin that this developer gets? I mean, nobody does something for free.
So
I didn't think these guys are nonprofit. So what's their profit margin? Is the profit margin a fixed percentage in the contract?
No, it's not a fixed percentage. We allowed them to arrange their capital structure however made the most sense to them, as long as they could get as far below our number as possible. But what I will tell you is different about this kind of project than any other is because typically you're dealing with just the building of a structure, mm-hmm. and then you have the operation and maintenance. And those are all areas where somebody's going to try to make a rate of return. Across this structure, the project company is now responsible for the finance, the building, the construction, the O&M over a 35-year period. So they have the ability to float that rate of return across all areas, and we're not paying separate individualized pieces. And this is what allows us, when you look at the 35-year total cost of ownership of the building, for this actually to be cheaper than your typical design, bid, build, and then separately operate
model. So you're telling me in the contract we'll have a Price is Right clause, meaning that you will not go over these actual retail price. That's what you're telling me?
What we say is there's an annual service fee payment. So in this case, it's the $46.8 million. Mm-hmm. And that's the price. That's the maximum price that the city would pay in any year. Now, that's subject to deductions or penalties. If they don't come, if the courtrooms aren't available, if they don't take out the trash, all those different other things, there are penalties and deductions by which that amount can be lowered.
Will there be something in the contract that says, hey, Deputy Mayor Joe Blow, because y'all going to be long gone. Everybody, all of us will be long gone. Hey, 20 years ago, we cut this deal, but, you know, that Collins guy, he sold us a bill of goods. That sheriff guy sold us a bill of goods. And inflation is now 30%. We need help. And if you don't give us help, we're going to take you to court and turn you over to TMZ.
We fixed the payment, so that's one of the pieces that is a big draw for
is
this
that
particular.
Ironclad, because any contract can be busted now.
No, it's in the agreement, and that's what the city's going to pay, and that's what they've went in price. So we feel 100% comfortable in terms of this is something that the company will itself will honor. The other thing that we have, frankly, to our advantage is we have groups who have put their own money, their own equity. We have lenders who want to get paid back. So they're going to make sure that these folks operate it in the manner that they said they would.
Am I reading correctly that these partners called Heartland Justice Partners, they have picked the people they want to play with? Is that fair to say?
So all teams started off with a very large, they're large contractors first and foremost. So they picked their general contractor and some of those different pieces. But this is ultimately, as you saw, a $400 million construction project. There are a lot of vendors still yet to come. So they're going through the process of completely filling out their team. What they did initially was get enough folks on board to make sure that they could do the design correctly and that they could price the building appropriately.
Why a French company?
So they're actually, and this has been a little bit of a misconception, it's a U.S.-based infrastructure fund. So they have a
this Meridiam infrastructure is U.S.-based, even though the founding partner and CEO, looks like Steve Campbell, used to work for Bart Peterson. Thierry Dio, he looked awful black to me.
So this is
a black Frenchman, I guess.
The fund that's supporting this particular project is a U.S.-based fund, and I can tell you that the people who are buying the debt as well, the insurance companies and the pensions funds are U.S. brand names also.
But and the other thing is, nowhere in all this documentation did I see anything, did I see the initials MBE, WBE, VBE, or an MBE goal. Why?
Those are 100% a part of the project. So this project will have a couple things in it that are very, very similar to Eskenazi. And as everyone knows, the Eskenazi Hospital building was, I think, wildly successful on this front. There will be the XBE goals that the city has in every contract, so the 15, 8, 3, and 1. And then in addition, the city has added a 30% workforce participation requirement for Marion County, again, which we imagine will be far exceeded when this project's completely finished.
Why wasn't that in the literature?
I guess that'd be a question for our press people, Amos.
They know I would be looking for that's the second thing I would be looking at, and a lot of people in the community would be looking at. Why would that not be there?
Well, I guess from our perspective, we look at it as a standard part of the way that we do business here in Marion County. It's something that's included in all of our contracts. It's something that we would expect that would be included in this one as well.
Who controls security?
So the sheriff maintains his security in the same way that he always has.
For both the courthouse and obviously the jail, but the courthouse, the metal detectors, the whole ball of wax?
Yeah, I can envision the sheriff's office would have security of the entire project of the entire facility, since we're there with at this particular point about 685 deputy sheriffs, so we would probably take care. And by state law, the sheriff has security of all buildings and property leased or owned by the city of Indianapolis.
But the developer controls maintenance, janitorial, window washing, who controls food service in the courtroom. I'm sure that there's got to be a snack bar there somewhere.
Yeah, so anything, the sheriff would continue to hold his contracts for the food service just like he does today.
Mm-hmm.
For any kind of retail component that would go in, that would be something that would have to be bid out per state law. So we haven't gone through all the details yet there.
The same would be for the bank machines.
Yeah, same as it is today in the city county building.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's neighbors. We'll take calls in just a hot second. A couple of other things. How do you define the cost of this? Because there's all these numbers floating around. There's $408 million, it says in the literature, that the builders swear that they're going to build this for $408, even if it costs them $612. They're promising you 408, no cost overruns, any of that kind of stuff. Did I read the literature correctly?
Yeah, and if you ask how I'd define the number, I'd say it's $3.3 million per year under what we pay today.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the history of P3 deals in the U.S. and overseas as well, the Long Beach Courthouse, which is the precedent for this particular project, was completed on time, under budget, in all the ways, and this company, the same company that will be doing this project, delivered in all the ways that they said they would.
What was do anyone know the minority participation in the Long Beach project?
That I'm not aware of.
Isn't that something we ought to know?
Well, I think to the company's perspective, they'll defer to the city and the county and the municipality in which they work in terms of what they're going to be able to deliver. So we're confident. Walsh is a Midwest contractor. They've done projects throughout Indiana, Indianapolis. So we're confident on their ability to deliver in that area.
In terms of there were these contracts that were let before this decision things like the now legendary contract with the outside PR firm that was supposed to be doing media contact and contacting with elected officials. And I couldn't understand why I was the only one, why I had to contact them if they were getting a contract to contact media, why they never contacted me. But that's a whole nother thing. And there were some other contracts that, never went before the council for approval. This is your opportunity to tell yours. Why do you have to do that that way? Why on this, some of these upfront costs, you can just go to the council and say, council, we need these upfront costs to do this deal.
So I think to go back to your question, Amos, this is a $400 million construction project. It's incredibly complex. We want to make sure that we're doing the right thing for the city for a 35 to a 50 year period. So it's important for us to bring on people with skills and expertise to make sure that the city gets the best deal possible. Regarding the contract amounts, and this is the same point that we made to the City County Council at the time, was that their interpretation of what was needed in terms of approvals differs very much from our own. When we went and looked, this is the same way that projects across multiple administrations have been carried out in over the course of the last 20 years.
Is there anything in this agreement that prohibits the city from making extra payments? Is there anything that would prohibit the city from giving this developer an extra $46 million in a year and just knock a year off the term?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So is there anything to keep, you know, say you do this deal, and then you've got the building that the sheriff sits on, that the current jail sits on, and the city owns that land. So you would then be auctioning that land off to the highest bidder. If downtown is as hot a place as everybody says it is, if I believe the Indy downtown propaganda that downtown is the hottest place, that piece of property will go. Why couldn't you take, if you sold it for $20-30 million, take that money and use that to knock a year or 9 months off the end of the term? Is that doable?
You could do that, and you could do any number of things with that money. And those are revenues when you look at the land that's going to become available when this project's done, when you look at the money that the city's going to see in terms of lease payments that it's no longer paying because it's able to bring some offsite entities back into the city county building. That's all gravy over the $3.3 million a year that we're getting back over what we spend today.
And that's why we ought to see a spreadsheet of what those dollars actually are?
Yep, we'll be providing that. But I can tell you, when you look at the numbers in terms of the development, that didn't figure into our costs. We've left that all. That's going to be we didn't figure that into our revenue projection. So we didn't come back and say the former jail property is going to be worth $10 million and factor that into our revenue that'll be available.
No, I wouldn't want you. I'm looking at any extra revenue would knock a year off. So maybe we can get it down to 30 years.
That'd be an even better deal for us and something I think we'd all be ecstatic about.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me start today with Judy. Hi, Judy.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Okay, I got a couple questions.
Okay.
Who approved this? The governor or the mayor?
Okay, who approved doing this deal?
So this is something that the city sat down, the mayor sat down with a number of our stakeholders, including Sheriff Layton, the city county council, the prosecutor, the public defender, the community corrections folks, and said that this is an effort that we should go forward and move forward with. This is another, you know, point that we should make regarding this project is this is an effort that's been studied for over 20 years, going back to Gypsy, the Indy Bar Association, and any other number of folks. So there's been an identified need for the project from the beginning. Going forward, however, ultimately, the city will have to go in front of the courts, which is a stakeholder I inadvertently left off there, and the city county council to get approval before the deal's finished.
Why the rush to do this by the end of March?
So from our perspective, we have committed financing, which means we know exactly how much this project's going to cost us for a period of time. Beyond that, the city takes risks on the financing. But when you
why does the city take risks if it's these other people that are taking the risk? Why are we taking the risk?
Because when they go and bid us a number, the city got 210 days of committed financing, or pardon me, 180 days of committed financing, which is nearly unheard of. So when you look at that, they can't go back and promise us that $400 million worth of borrowing is going to be at the same rate in November of 2014 as it will be in November of 2015. So they give us a period of time at which that rate's good, just like a bank would on a home loan. And after that, the city takes the risk, either if the rate goes up or the rate goes down.
But realistically, and I see your point. It's like when you go to your bank and you get the okay to get a mortgage to go for a house, and you think you're looking at a house and you're going to go start the negotiations. I get that, but we're dealing with government. We're in an election year, and there's not really been a lot of conversation with the broader community, with broader taxpayers. I've talked to several members of the council who have received no briefings about this. Not the deal announced, but no briefings about what this deal is, even the kinds of things that we've just talked about. People in my community have not really heard these kind of details. And so the business person in me said it is unrealistic to get a community consensus on this in less than 90 days.
So I think to answer your question, any counselor who hasn't had a briefing has just not wanted to have one. We've been out working with all the stakeholders since we started this project to try to keep them updated on what was happening, how the project moved forward, and ultimately what it would look like. We've had a number of meetings when this project first started that were meant to be outreach community meetings to talk about the idea and where we were in the process. And this has been, you know, approximately a year ago.
Have all the key stakeholders in the African American community been briefed? NAACP, Urban League, Concerned Clergy, Indianapolis Recorder, Indiana Herald. Have they been briefed?
Have they all been briefed? No, but that's something. Something that we're going to go through over the next 90-day period. Part of the issue with this process is we've got to make sure that we could get the best deal going forward, right? To talk about what the bids were, where things would go back. So we've kept some of this information close to the vest because we wanted to make sure that the numbers came in under our affordability limit. I think ultimately we were, you know, vindicated in that point because they did. We're saving $3.3 million a year over what we're paying today. Now that we have the numbers, now that we have a very specific bid that we can go talk to folks about, that's going to be our next step, is to move forward methodically to make sure that everybody's questions are answered.
So you're telling me that Urban League will be briefed, NAACP will be briefed, all the ministerial associations will be briefed, all elected officials, whether they're at the city level or even the state level, will be briefed, key stakeholders, the Recorder, the Herald, and others will be briefed on this?
We will move through everybody. Ultimately, this is a non-political, bipartisan issue. This isn't about the sheriff or the mayor. It's about what's best for the community for the next 35 years. So we'll be working through the community methodically over the next 90 days to make sure that everybody agrees with that statement.
Does the city understand that as I'm sitting here and the community is listening, this is really the first time a lot of people in my community have heard some of the details on this? Y'all gotta understand, I've been around a few years and a few public-private partnership deals. And this is the first time I have never heard any mention of what minority vendors are going to be involved from the get-go. And so, you know, people hearing that get that, the antennas go up and say, wait a minute. This was done in other deals before, whether it was RCA Dome, whether it was this, whether it was that. Why not here? I should be able to look down a list of these Heartland Justice Partners and see somebody's name of an African-American vendor or contractor or sub that I know, that we got enough here that have had expertise in all these kind of things, and I'm not seeing that.
And part of that is due to just the different way in which this project is put out and bid than your typical design bid build project like you see at Eskenazi. Mm-hmm. Once this is all said and done, I'm confident that you'll see greater participation in this project as you have seen in any other public project in Indianapolis.
239-1310 This afternoon's name is We'll Take a Break. We'll be back with the Deputy Mayor for Economic Development, Adam Collins. We'll be back with the Sheriff, John Layton. Oh, coming up on Friday, why did the Art Museum raise their price from zero to $18? And didn't include a senior citizen discount? Didn't explicitly say that they were going to agree with the free access plan that all the other museums have for low-income families with children? Hopefully by Friday, the head of the museum, Charles Venable, will be here with us live, and he'll have his act cleaned up. Also, Dr. Virginia Kay will be here on Thursday to talk about the poor health of folks in Marion County. We got to get them healthier. Anyway, it's Afternoons with Amos on a very busy Monday.
Hi, this is State Representative Greg Porter, and you are listening to Indiana Broadcasters Hall of Fame inductee Amos Brown, right here on 1310 The Light.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos with the folks with the Justice Center. Got an email at praiseindy.com. SR says, if we're going to decrease our jail population, how do they make money? If we decrease crime and get rid of the laws that impact minorities and any fees they can charge will go up and more fees to inmates and families to get calls, etc. So they're saying, wait a minute, if we take a bite out of crime and there's less people arrested, less people go to jail, less people in the jail, and will the fees go up to try to make the nut?
Look, and again, if I have to dust off beds every day, that will be a great problem to have. I would love to have a jail that's only half full because that means that we're doing a job. That means that people are back in the workforce instead of in our jails. And that is our goal, is to keep the population down. Well, I hope we have two empty floors at some point at the Marion County Jail. But the reality is that since the old one's built, it was pretty much obsolete within 5 or 10 years of the time it was built. We're just building for the future. Probably not for this sheriff. I'm not sure I'll ever sit in the seat of that new jail. But that doesn't matter. The bottom line is that I truly believe that the people of Marion County, my kids and my grandkids and all of our kids, will be able to enjoy a much safer county when we can do what is right with the inmates that have to be within the Marion County Jail, whether the jail is half full or full. And while I'm talking about that, you know, we have done everything we possibly can to keep the jail population down in the jail we're in now. We have the entire enterprise, public defender's office, the courts obviously are a big stakeholder, the sheriff's office, of course, the prosecutor. We all work together to get these folks through the funnel so they can be adjudicated and either go where they need to go or go home in some cases when they're found not guilty. But that will continue. So we don't fill up that place as soon as it's opened up. That's not the goal here whatsoever. But we want to be able to be prepared for the future because, as we said a couple of times on this show today, we don't know exactly what the future is going to hold.
And Sheriff, if I can add on for a second, there is no piece of this project that ties the developer's revenue to the inmate count. That's there. I mean,
well, that's true.
That's a privatization piece, and that's not what's happening. The sheriff continues to operate this, so they're paying us to operate. We're paying them to operate that building. Regardless of, as the sheriff said, it's full of full of detainees or with none in there.
So with my manager's hat on, because I think I'm the only person left now in Indianapolis media that carries a manager's hat and has ever had to deal with budgets. We were talking during the break, and you said that the square footage is 1,270,000, so 1,270,000 square feet. We're paying 46.8 million using the 209 figure. That comes up to $36.85 per square foot. Brand new office space in this town is pushing $26 to $27 a square foot. So, from an economic standpoint, why would we be paying the highest square footage rate for space?
Because a jail is about three times more expensive to build than an office building. I mean, that's a jail and a courthouse are about as expensive a building. A hospital is about as expensive as you can
build.
When
people hear that and they think, oh, does that mean the floors are going to be made of gold? There's going to be marble inlaid. What makes that so expensive?
Well, you look at the amount of concrete, the amount of steel that you have to have. I mean, this is a structure that has to will be one of the safest structures in the state in terms of the weather conditions it has to withstand. So the costs of jails, the costs of courthouse are much more expensive to build than your traditional office spaces. And in terms of jail, you're looking at two to three times more. But all the finishes in this building were meant to be economical. It's not going to be a Taj Mahal. It's going to be, I think, in line with other facilities that you've seen across the city county. It's going to be a facility that honors justice, that gives people, a place, respects their
these
dignity while they're there.
These will not look like federal courtrooms, because those are compared to our local courtrooms, that's the difference between a house in Geist and a house in Martindale Brightwood. No disrespect to that neighborhood.
Not at all. We're focused on the efficient use of space, not what it looks like.
Let me back to the phones in Jeannie. Hi there.
Yes, Amos. This is a wonderful program. I have a comment on law enforcement, specifically marijuana. I don't care about marijuana just because I think it's very low-hanging fruit, and I would rather see my tax money and my public servants work if it's legalized and collect the tax. Thank you for your program.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Charles. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, how you doing, Amos?
Fine, sir.
I have two quick questions.
Okay.
Nobody said anything about who's covering the demolition costs of the plant.
The what cost? I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. What cost?
The demolition of the truck and bus plants. Who's footing that bill?
That's a great question. Who handle the cost of demolishing truck and bus?
The property owner. You're talking about the current facility.
Yeah,
that's the property owner, the Racer Trust, which took over for GM in bankruptcy. They're taking the site down to grade.
Who has certified that land, that site is environmentally safe and sound? Has the city received a certificate from, I think it's called the GM Trust or the Placer Trust or something, that swears on the Holy Scriptures that there's no gunk and zombies or strange stuff that will come out of the ground and cause trouble in 10 or 12 years? I'm being facetious, but I'm also being very serious.
So that's one of the things we went through when we first looked at the property. We had our own environmental folks go and do an analysis, and I can tell you that when you look at the Racer Trust's involvement in that site, that's one of the most poked and prodded sites in the city of Indianapolis. So as we've gone through, as the three potential bidders went through and did their environmental analysis, we've been working closely with the bidders and IDEM to make sure that any and all environmental issues would be addressed.
Are there any current environmental issues that need to be cleaned up, any reclamation that needs to be done?
So there were some historical issues with soils that Racer Trust is taking care of.
That's their responsibility.
Their responsibility already been remediated. In addition, there are some groundwater issues that are present, and there's some monitoring that's required. And it adds to the cost of the building. So the city's going to have to put in what's called a vapor mitigation system to basically create a barrier between the ground and the facility. But that's all that was required by IDEM. And we've been in those conversations. We feel very comfortable.
This is a dumb question. Is the flood wall along White River sufficiently high?
Yeah, there's no, very few, if any, flooding issues over there. And again, that's something that there's a million gallon cistern down there that holds storage water that was a legacy of the GM stamping plant. So
million gallon cistern, my lord.
So there's a lot of infrastructure in place. It's a huge site. There's a lot of infrastructure in place to manage all that.
Will there be extra soundproofing in the courtroom so if there's a dramatic turn in a criminal trial and the 344 to Newark is going, the jurors in the court won't hear that?
Yes, we've had one of the parts of our programs, we had an acoustic engineer come in there and look at.
One of the handlers here didn't know that I could imitate how the train goes by.
I thought it was pretty accurate myself, to be honest. But
you've been on the site a lot?
Well, I've been on probably 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's enormous. You wouldn't believe just by driving by
it
how
is
big that site
I've
is.
Been, I've driven by there after they had that first meeting in the neighborhood where the neighborhood was coming at y'all with pitchforks and what have you. Are there plans for public meetings to educate people about this, or is that the responsibility of the council?
No, we plan to hold public meetings to talk about this, and we think it'll be in conjunction with the council because, quite honestly, that's the most efficient way to do that. But we're starting to work through now to get an idea in past projects like the water transfer and others. Town halls were held with individual councilors in their neighborhood. So we're still working through what that'll look like, but our guess will be that that'll be in conjunction with the council members.
Is the actual ordinance a simple ordinance of authorization, or is this going to be one of them thick 25 or 30 or 50 page ordinances.
So we haven't seen it yet in terms of what the enabling authors.
They're not letting you write it?
That's how we know that we're still focused on trying to get through the process here, right? We haven't got started on the approval, but we're not sure what it'll look like, but it should be less complicated, I would think, than the parking meter deal or something like that that affected different areas of the code.
239-1310. Let me go to Elsie, quickly. Hi, Elsie. You got about a minute.
Oh, I'll just get 1 minute. That's okay.
Go ahead. Come on.
Why can't we find money to build boys and girls clubs and more YMCAs? That's all I got to say.
I think a part of this debate, Deputy Mayor, is about priorities. You know, granted, people have been talking about this combined job. I've been here 40 years. And people were talking about this in the mid-70s when I came to Indianapolis. But there are so many pressing needs in this city. How do you, on behalf of the administration, answer Elsie's question of why this priority when we have other priorities going begging?
Well, when you look at this project, I think, again, one of the misconceptions has been that we're throwing new money at this. And really, the only way we capture the savings, that $3.3 million a year, is by consolidating operations and creating a more efficient structure. So what I'd tell Elsie is us doing this project and projects similar to like this creates the opportunity for us to have additional money to fund additional programs, whether it's in criminal justice, whether it's paying down the debt or something like additional programming options for youth.
These P3 programs are relatively new. Is it fair to say that within the last 8 to 10 years?
So relatively new in the U.S. They've been more expansive in Canada and some other places, but in the last 5 to 10 years, you're 100% right. They've started to pick up steam.
So how do you answer those to say, why do we have to do it this way? Why not the old-fashioned traditional way? Because on some comments I've seen on websites, I've already seen pushback. You couldn't find an American company to do this at the price we wanted to pay?
So I'd say relative to the model, this is the most cost-effective model. And I think the proof is in the result we got. Initially, when we looked, our estimated capital cost was $100 million more than what this company came back with. The other thing that I'll emphasize is that it will be local American people building this. Walsh is a contractor headquartered out of Chicago that works extensively in Indiana that'll be building this building. In addition, when you look at the local participation requirements and look at how effective Eskenazi is seen, what you'll ultimately end up seeing is the majority of these folks who are going to end up building this building are Marion County metro area folks. Another piece that I'd add to, based upon an earlier question about that minority participation, is the fact that the Heartland Justice Partners have already had two forums with over 100 or right around 100 subcontractors that showed up to get information.
And how was the minority community informed of that?
That's something I'd have to check with them specifically, but I believe it's through the construction community.
And the reason I ask that, in the building of Eskenazi, in the building of Lucas Oil Stadium, there were minority vendors who were charged with the responsibility of encouraging minority vendors to participate in those kind of forums. Those minority vendors did outreach to African American media. We had them on the program. So yeah, I have a jaundiced eye by hearing you say that there were outreaches to minority vendors, yet that outreach did not use African American media to tell African American vendors of those availabilities, yet they were done for Lucas Oil Stadium and they were done for Eskenazi.
So I guess what I'm telling you is we've had 96 different companies that have had the opportunity to come in and talk before we've gotten to the more extensive outreach. So they have a firm, the bidding company has a firm that has done these kind of projects in the past.
Is that a minority firm?
Yes, it is.
Well, do we know which minority firm it is?
I'll have to get you the information, the details on which firm. I can't remember the firm name. Same folks who've worked on Market Square Arena and other projects. So they will be coming through and helping with minority participation in those different factors.
I find it very hard to believe that there is a minority firm in charge of minority outreach that did not knock on my door. That fact alone tells me their sensitivity toward the minority community is weak.
Well, I think
Deputy Mayor, no disrespect, but I'm just stunned at that.
So what I think we're saying ultimately, Amos, is one, I'll advise them to come talk to you. But secondly, you've had over 100 firms that have had the opportunity to come in and talk to folks, and we haven't even really gotten into the process. We're at a 30% design phase. We're going to start to see that picking up as we go forward. So, again, I'm confident that we'll have the same or greater level of minority participation that we've had in any public works project here in Indianapolis.
Rochelle will be our last question, and this is just the first that you'll hear of a number of discussions that we'll have on this program about the Justice Center, because this is one of the big issues as we go into the first quarter of 2015. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine.
I have a question or a number that I can call someone. Back in 1995, my sister.
Well, hold it. What does this have to do with us building a new jail and a new courthouse?
Well, I was referred to you.
Oh, that means you're not listening to the radio this second.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I was referred to you.
I'm sure you were referred to me, but sometimes it helps if you listen to the radio to know what we're doing. So you'll have to call back tomorrow and we can handle that, okay?
Okay, I'm sorry.
No problem at all. Deputy Mayor, I think you're going to add something?
Well, I was just going to give you the name of that firm, which is Indiana Strategic Resource Group. So that's the firm that's in charge.
Indiana, and this is a minority firm.
I believe so.
Indiana, yes. What?
Strategic Resource Group.
Strategic, if they is minority and minority African American and don't even know to call the senior African American in media in this city, I don't think they're a great minority firm. And if they're listening right now, you can get a hold of my office number. It's 266-9600. I look forward to their call. There is a special website where people can find documentation. We'll try to get as much of the documentation on our website, praiseindy.com, when we post all of this. Is there a special website y'all got for this?
So
just go to indy.gov.
/Justice Center.
Everything you ever want to know. Great pictures.
27,000 pages of documents. You can dig through them over the holidays.
That's right. It's better reading than going to see some of the movies for Christmas. Sheriff, it's always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa to you and the Deputy Mayor for Economic Development, Adam Collins. Guys, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.